this truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And in studio, I want to welcome the latest victim of Bush League economics, Socialism 101, my former frequent co-host, Doug McBurney. Doug, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Bob, it's so good to be back in the studio with America's favorite right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host.
Yeah, it is good. And you've been too busy working, making a living to join me in the studio, but you've been liberated from from that drudgery of having a job.
I've been set free.
You've been set free. Bush League economics, Socialism 101, the Republicans, faith-based social initiatives, and the bailouts, billions for, Wall Street investment banks.
Yes. Well, we'll get to we'll get to my economic contribution to the overall picture later. I want to talk about the headline that we saw on Drudge earlier.
The Drudge headline, election. Matt Drudge, Drudge Report. Yeah. What was the headline?
It was a picture of Nancy Pelosi, so picture that.
Nancy Pelosi and Obama, they're going to bail out the auto industry.
Yeah.
Right?
So a picture of Nancy Pelosi, and underneath it, it says, save the whales? No.
Save the whales? No.
Save the cars.
Save the cars.
Save the cars.
It is really funny. I mean, Al Gore, the Democrats, say the number one threat to the earth is the automobile.
I remember reading that.
The number one threat. And now they're going to spend tens of billions of dollars bailing out Detroit.
Yeah.
Saving Detroit.
It's a little schizophrenic of the leftists.
It is that.
The Democrats, leftists.
It is that very much. And it's going to happen, right? Obama will spend tens of billions of dollars more helping to bail out GM and Ford. And what's interesting is I'm just imagining what Fox News will say, what Sean Hannity will say. On Hannity and Combs. I'm just picturing it.
Sean Hannity is going to come, and when Obama issues the first bailout check,
yeah,
Sean Hannity is going to get on the air, and he is going to launch into a diatribe against the socialism of the new Democratic administration.
That's absolutely
destroying
right.
Destroying free economics.
And I just wish I could be on that show at that moment, because I would want to say, Sean, shut up and just smack him right in the face. Because it's been the Republicans and the Republican administration, the Bush administration, the Republican Treasury Secretary, that they've been the masters of this enormous socialist bailout and socialism ownership. And now you've got, I mean, Latvia, of all places, just took over their second largest bank.
Latvia.
I mean, when the Balkan states are doing it, you know it's gone around the world.
It's not the Russians taking over their banks. It's the Latvians taking over
their banks. Yeah, and it has. And their excuse is, well, everybody else is doing it. That was their excuse.
Well, Bob, my prediction is, number one, Sean won't let you in the studio for that show. That's number one. But number two, Sean will say it.
Yeah.
He will attack Obama as a socialist and a redistributionist and a leftist.
And his audience will realize that he's being hypocritical.
His audience will keep listening.
They have no idea.
They will keep listening.
They will forget that George W. Bush was the architect and that John McCain was an advocate. He fought for the $700 billion socialist
He package suspended his campaign to go back to Washington.
In order to go back and bring us one small step for Washington, one giant leap to the left in socialism for the government.
Well, but what about the other conservative hosts on networks like Fox? I mean, there's a long list of them. Surely,
well, there's
someone.
Horrendo Revolto. I mean, Geraldo Rivera.
Yeah, him of the mustache, yes.
And there's Aurelio O'Reilly.
O'Reilly, now, can we count on O'Reilly to point out the fact that even he has, if I'm not mistaken, O'Reilly's for the bailout? And let me just bounce his position and the position of a number of other conservatives. Oh, yeah, he's big bailout, rah-rah. Anyway, and I've got conservative friends who just say, well, Doug, what we can't allow to happen is for Detroit to go bankrupt and all these banks and insurance companies to go bankrupt, because we'd be talking about tens, nay, hundreds of thousands of people
right.
who would suddenly be out of work. And that could cause social chaos. It could cause a breakdown of the social order. It could, you know what? It would interfere with domestic tranquility.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, so let me tell you. Be afraid. Yeah. Be very afraid.
Yeah, we need socialism to save us from economic disaster.
Right, right.
So let me tell you a chat I had with a regular at Starbucks Sunday morning about 5:15 in the morning.
Okay.
This Sunday morning. And he came over to me and he said, Bob, it's the economy's a disaster and the bailout was horrendous. But you know what? The automakers, they're the backbone of our country, and we really got to give them these loans and these bailouts. So he recognizes it was a disaster and he's already bought into the cliche. Just you mesmerize people. It's like you give them tranquilizers. You say a few phrases and their eyes glaze over and they say, I am a socialist.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, I said, and I won't mention names. I said, Bob, the problem is that there's a principle, which is thou shall not steal.
Uh-huh.
And the government doesn't have the right, the authority to take money from struggling young families and give them to billion-dollar corporations for their mismanagement, foolishness, greed.
Lying, theft, misleading clients about the value of certain securities and equities.
Well, that's right. And even in the auto industry, I mean, if you, in fact, can't compete, then there should not be a corporate welfare program for firms that cannot compete for whatever reasons.
But, Bob, if there were suddenly hundreds of thousands of people out of work.
There are.
No.
Well, if
they're bailing them out to keep the, there could be hundreds of thousands, maybe a million people.
Well, there are. The last quarter we had another 250,000 people out of work. But you know, back at the end of the Civil War, we had 1 million people overnight out of work. 1 million people, and we didn't have government programs to job training programs and to reabsorb them into the economy. The people who wanted to work worked. And people found a way. And if we had government programs to adopt those people back into the economy, it would have been way worse. Hmm. So if we could do it back in the 1860s, we can certainly do it today. And so socialism, and you know what? This guy at Starbucks, I won't say his name, but he connected with that point. Even though he's willing to go the socialism bailout plan.
Right.
He connected with that. Oh, well, that's a good point. It's wrong. And, you know, that Ronald Reagan was wildly popular, and even moderates liked him because he said, look, it's wrong. So I'm not going to support it because it's wrong. They said, well, the country needs an energy policy. And he said, no, it doesn't. And people were stunned. I said, what do you mean? You want to be the president? The country doesn't need an energy policy? He said, no, we're not the electric utility.
Yeah.
Let the oil companies and let the electric companies have an energy policy. They provide it, and we're a customer.
But if we were to leave it to the auto companies, I mean, some of these huge companies could go out of business. Wouldn't that be devastating?
Yeah, it'd be like Studebaker.
Oh, yeah, Studebaker.
Who else? Aren't there there's a long list of companies that either went out of business or should have gone out of business.
Yeah, you're right.
Are there any others? I don't know.
AMC.
AMC.
Remember in the '70s, AMC went out of business.
Yeah, Studebaker in the '60s. They had a museum in South Bend, Indiana, where Bob Inert Live was hosted from there for a couple years.
Yeah,
back during the '90s, and so you know the steel industry, went out of business. And hey, it's fun to have these industries here in America. It's a good thing. It's great. But if they're mismanaged, what happens now is we have a whole long list of firms that are lined up for multi-billion-dollar bailout packages.
Yeah.
And where does it end? Where does it end? It should have never started. That's where it ends. Firms shouldn't think that if they get billions of dollars in the hole through greed and mismanagement, that there's going to be a bailout from the taxpayer.
Okay, well, let me give you another argument.
All right.
What if suddenly we find ourselves in a significant military conflict and we need cars and steel and we can't make it anymore?
Well, then we build them. I mean, we got into World War II. We were completely unprepared for a war in the Pacific. We had guys out there waiting for reinforcements. How long did they wait?
Some of them waited until they were overrun by the Japanese and killed.
Until they were dead.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But you respond in a crisis. And, yeah, but that doesn't mean, see, the argument is, well, you have to go socialism because the auto industry is a backbone industry. You need it. It's essential.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? So are the airlines.
Yeah.
So are the trains. So are computers. So is energy.
The banks.
So is food. So are the banks. So is insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, think of an industry that's not essential other than MTV. Think of an industry that's not essential.
Public television.
The satellite. Yeah. Satellites are essential. Communication, cell phones are essential. So let's do what Chavez is doing. Let's nationalize it all.
Yeah. Well, I'm convinced that if GM goes bust, that there's a lot of smart guys at GM, middle managers and even elsewhere within the company, who will regroup and form a new car company that won't be as foolish and won't waste as much money and won't pay their executives as much, and they'll probably make a better car.
Yeah.
There'll be some disruption, but we can buy Toyotas during that time.
We could. We could drive Hondas for 400,000 miles.
Well, this is true.
While we're waiting to buy our next American car.
Oh, man.
So, but American cars are a lot better than the bad rap they got back during the 70s and 80s.
Oh, they're great.
But, hey, you know what? It takes a half a century to live down that kind of bad rap.
Yeah, it does.
They got it.
Yeah.
Because they were produced. Do you remember those years? So you were too young.
No, but I remember my dad fixing those cars.
I'm 50. You didn't drive unless you had a toolbox in the back.
Right.
If it was an American car.
Yeah.
But that was back in the 70s and 80s.
So they're making a better car now.
Much better. But it's by accident. You can't help with all the technology.
Yeah.
You can't help but make a better car today.
And so what's happened is the companies have become bloated and irresponsible. And if they collapse, they'll resurrect themselves in some form, is all I'm saying.
That's
and it'll
right.
be smaller,
and what
leaner,
are we going to do, bail out Detroit? I mean, could you find a bigger hole than Detroit, Michigan?
I was there recently.
Is it possible?
It looks like a war zone.
They've been, and you know what? The same mindset. They've been bailing out Detroit, Michigan for 50 years. That's what it looks like.
Just let it sink
Benton
into the
Harbor,
lake.
Michigan.
Yeah, just Benton let it Harbor. Sink in the lake.
Right, let it die. Let it die. They're for euthanasia for people, but they can't let a $1 billion firm die?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want those firms to die, but socialism, the cure is worse than the disease.
Yeah, but the Democrats do look kind of schizophrenic on this. They want to save the cars that are destroying the planet.
Yes, yeah, save the cars. Matt Drudge's headline is hysterical.
Well, it's there's the big debate. Is the new Democratic administration with their major majorities, are they going to rule from the left? Are they going to moderate? And I'm of the opinion that they're going to rule... That they're going to rule from the left.
Oh, yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah, Obama will be as left-wing as he possibly can. Although I have predicted here on Bubba Near Live that he's not going to try to cut and run from Iraq. So we'll find out. I sure hope he doesn't.
Yeah, we will find out.
That would be a disaster.
Hey, speaking of the economy,
yeah,
the post office. Did you read this today? It was on the Associated Press.
They're cutting
post office
jobs.
Is planning their first layoffs in history, by the way. Hmm. How long have we had email? 15 years? And they're,
and
just
they're finally
now,
getting around?
They're going to lay off maybe up to 40,000 workers.
Wow.
They're going to get laid off from
now,
the
they
post.
Have a lot of employees.
Well, they've got over 500,000, 685,000 employees.
That is over.
And they're
going to
lay off. My concern is that we're going to have 40,000 unemployed postal workers on the streets, and we're already seeing that uptick in gun sales since the election.
Now, that's true.
And, I mean, that's just a little bit scary to ponder.
That's
that combination of factors. You know, you talk about a perfect storm.
It is weird. Isn't it weird how people go postal and all the headlines over a lengthy period of years? And you wonder, why is it? You know, and it's like postal workers are protected because it's a quasi-government job and there's a postal union. And they have all these layers of protection. I remember my wife, Cheryl, went to the Arvada post office. And it closes, this is when it closes at 5 o'clock, and it's 2 minutes to 5 by Cheryl's watch.
Okay.
And the door is just cracked open. So she's like, oh, good, I got here in time. She goes to open the door, and the door gets yanked back from the other side. And Cheryl thought it was like, you know, the wind conditions or something. So she pulls it again, and it gets yanked back. And it's a postal worker who's saying, you're not getting in here. You're not. It's 5 o'clock. You're not getting in here. And my wife, you know, she's so the polite and proper and timid. She was just shocked.
Looking around for candid camera.
Yeah.
What's going on? That's impossible.
And, you know, a real private company, they appreciate customers. And I compare it to going to FedEx, where you go into FedEx. Do you remember years ago when we'd go into the post office with hundreds of packages?
I remember.
And they'd get angry?
Just a dirty look. They'd give you that dirty look.
They would get so angry that we brought them a lot of business.
Yeah.
Because it was when Bob and Your Live was first getting started. You were the GM around
here. We were hauling a truck bed load of mail every month down to the post office.
Yeah, and we just started these bulk mailings of our Bible studies and our TV shows and our DVDs,
which
videos.
You can still order, by the way, by calling 1-800-8-NYART. They are still available.
1-800-836-9278. And the plot manuscript, now it's printed, bound book, but the plot overview of the Bible, the debate with Zaketh, does God exist?
Yeah.
All these fun materials, and the post office would get angry at
us. They didn't appreciate that.
They didn't.
No.
And it was weird. I thought it was weird. It's like, we know you have a routine, and we'll figure out how to do these, you know, mass mailings better, but we're just bringing you 130 packages to mail. They were angry, and they said you could only do 10.
That's right.
You remember,
I remember that.
So we do 10, and there'd be a line of four people, and there's like, you know, five tellers there. We do 10, then we get on the back of the line,
do 10,
back of the line, so we go through 13 times.
Right.
And they were just enraged.
The creativity of small business.
So with gun sales way up, and then, yikes.
Yeah, 40,000 of these guys. Well, you know, I think that a man or a woman, someone who works, their self-esteem is really based not on security of their job, but on productivity and feeling like they're actually doing something. Mm. So a lot of postal workers, I mean, there's 685,000 of them in the age of email. I think a lot of them are sitting around and they have a secure job and they've been deceived into thinking that that's going to satisfy them, but it really doesn't satisfy them. And eventually, some of them go crazy.
Yeah, if a machine can take your place, it's really not fulfilling to win the battle to get the paycheck.
Mm-mm.
It's just not fulfilling.
No.
I don't want to do that. I don't want welfare so that I could get a check when my boss is losing money because a machine could do what I'm doing.
Right. And there's a struggle that goes on in one's mind if you're in that position. And eventually, you know, some people snap and some people just go out and get a real job and start being productive and feeling better about themselves.
Yeah. Be creative. So. Be productive. Work hard.
All right. Now, I want to talk about the Republicans.
Uh-oh.
Because I haven't had a chance to talk to you about the Republicans. I want to ask you your opinion because I value your opinion. What was the biggest mistake the Republicans made? Why were they trounced so handily by a political neophyte and the young and the foolish in America?
Biggest mistake Republicans made?
Yeah.
Running a Democrat. They ran a Democrat. I mean, when he had to pick his running mate, there was an argument that he had to pick a Republican so he could balance the ticket. And he really wanted Lieberman, you know?
I think he did. You know?
It's just like George W. Bush. He wants to put his friends on the Supreme Court who are hardcore pro-aborts.
Uh-huh.
That's who he wants to put, Alberto Gonzalez and the gal who started the women's studies program down at Baylor University. That's who he wants to put on the court, these pro-aborts. But then the pro-lifers who put him in office go into an outrage.
Uh-huh.
And so he has to put pro-choice judges on who the... You know, National Right to Life and Jay Sekulow, who they didn't research. They don't know they're pro-choice.
Uh-huh.
So here's McCain. He's a Democrat. He's a liberal. He's a pro-abort. And, you know, Doug, we were told that he's 100% pro-life.
Somebody told me. In fact, I got something in my mailbox shortly before the election. National Right to Life, as a matter of
fact. National Right to Life. 8 years ago, they came out with a report on McCain. They said he's a threat to the pro-life movement.
Was
the headline of their report.
Right?
That was their conclusion, the headline, the conclusion. John McCain is a threat to the pro-life movement. Oh, and 2 years ago, he had a 76% pro-life rating.
Is that right?
From National Right to Life.
Okay.
And he became increasingly pro-choice in the last 2 years, increasingly.
Yeah.
We document it.
But and since he was the nominee.
Since he's the nominee, 100%. And 100% rating from National Right to Life means you're probably a pro-abortion Republican.
Right.
That's what that means.
Or it means that you're the nominee.
Yeah.
And then you automatically get a 100% rating.
That's what they mean by that. That's what they mean. 100% pro-life means you're the Republican nominee.
This reinforces the argument that Hannity's audience and the Sean Rush Hannity and all of those, the whole plethora of alleged right-wing talk radio people, their audience will keep listening no matter what they say. No. And it all relates back to the same people who fund and administer National Right to Life are the same people who listen to Rush for 3 hours, have a coffee break, and then they listen to Hannity for 3 hours. It doesn't matter what they say. I remember Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all the others attacking John McCain during the campaign before he was the nominee. And there was even a threatened break from the Republican Party. People were actually saying, will Rush abandon the Republican Party if McCain becomes...
I got a call from a listener who said this past week, Sean Hannity said that the conservatives and Republicans should part ways. Now, I haven't confirmed that. I don't know anything about
that would be encouraging if he said that.
But if he said that, what he means is he's going with the Republicans. That's what he means by that, because he's... I mean, his guy is Rudy Giuliani.
I would suspect that you're...
That's his guy. They want to dump the pro-lifers and the people who are warning about homosexuality. That's who they want to dump. And so Mitt Romney, John McCain, and Rudy Giuliani, these are their, you know, their heroes. Not that McCain was the devil.
Until
he was the nominee.
Well, it took about a week after.
About a week.
I forget. So the New York Times wrote a nasty story about him, and then Rush, they all just lined up behind him like robots. Bush bots, Rush bots, whatever.
All right. So the biggest mistake the Republicans made was nominating a Democrat.
Okay, but don't you really mean that they've abandoned conservatives?
Well, yeah.
Don't you mean that in a sense?
They despise pro-lifers. George W. Bush is a pro-abort. I mean, Christians got to get over it. He's a pro-abort. He said in South Dakota 2 years ago, well, I'm against their abortion ban because there are no exceptions. So they gave him all the exceptions he could ever dream of, and he didn't support the ban. He couldn't care less. And, you know, Will Duffy, founder of the Collaborators Project, he points this out. If we were in Germany and somebody is the chancellor and they're against killing Jews, and one of the states say, okay, we got a ban, we're trying to ban killing Jews, and the pro-lifer says, oh, no, there are no exceptions. I oppose it.
Uh-huh.
I oppose it. And so then 2 years later, they say, okay, we're against killing Jews except for these and these. You can kill those. Here's your exceptions. And he still refuses to support it. George W. Bush is a pro-abort. George W. Bush is a pro-abort. Bush is a pro-abort. The Republican Party overall is a pro-abortion party. That's why they love every primetime speaker is a pro-abort. You know, Rudy Giuliani.
I remember. Oh, yeah.
And Mitt Romney.
So, Bob, we've talked about, you've talked about increasing social tension over the personhood issue, over the abortion issue.
Yeah, that's what we got to do. Increase social tension over abortion.
Is attacking alleged conservatives or Republicans, is that a way for us to increase social tension?
Oh, that's the best way. We need to continue to fight Planned Parenthood and the Dems.
For me to stand up in my neighborhood, my circle of friends, and to say that Barack Obama is a pro-abortion, he's a socialist, he's a Marxist, he's a child killer, he's pro-homosexual, doesn't resonate all that much because everybody knows that.
They know it and they don't care.
And they know that the majority of the people just elected him.
Right.
So Maybe the tactic we have to take is not with the liberals, the ones whose sin precede them to judgment, but the ones who are concealing from us who they are.
Yeah, yeah. That First Timothy verse. Yeah, we need to attack from the right.
Attack from the right. I like that.
Attack from the right. And the Republican, pro-choice Republicans who lie about being pro-life, we expose them. And the Christian ministries who provide cover for pro-choice Republicans, we expose them. And that's the easiest way to create social tension over abortion.
But it could cause the Republican Party to become
more openly pro-abortion. Yeah, more marginalized, more openly pro-abortion. Fine. But our goal is not to say we're not to be the saviors of the Republican Party. We're to obey God and fight for justice, fight for what's right, not give cover to pro-abortion Republicans. That's not my goal. I know that's the goal of quite a few Christian leaders.
We won't say any names.
No.
But there are a number of them.
Should we take a quick call? We have 1 minute from Indiana.
Am I going to push the button?
Right out there.
Okay, all right, good.
Quinn, welcome to Bob Inert Live.
Hello, Bob.
Go ahead, quick.
Hey, I just noticed something yesterday. The media was anticipating Obama and Bush meeting again at the White House.
Right.
And they gave part of the transcript from Obama's recent book.
Oh, yeah. I've read that. It's of their first meeting, which was bizarre.
Oh,
Yeah, well, Bush, he came up to Obama, and towards the end he said, hey, we both have something in common.
Yeah, we both debated Alan Keyes.
Yeah, and you know what Bush said about Keyes?
He said what?
That guy's a real piece of work.
That guy's a real piece of work. And then he had one of his aides squirt some hand sanitizer in his hand.
Get out of here.
Right after, this is according to Obama's book. After he shook Obama's hand, and he said to Barack Obama, he said, here, you want some? And Obama thought, I better accept or they'll think I'm unclean or something. So anyway, Quinn, thanks for pointing out, appreciate that call, that Bush and Obama, you know, Alan Keyes was the only person who had debated both Obama and John McCain.
Wow.
He's systematically left out of Republican debates. But, hey, the pro-lifers got over 250,000 votes for president nationwide. If you look at the Constitution Party and Alan Keyes and Ron Paul, you know, the perceived pro-lifers.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
250,000 vote, well over 250,000 votes.
And the personhood, we got nearly 600,000 votes. And we did was we forced 2 million people in Colorado to face an issue and to actually write down, we've made an indelible mark on history. Mm. 2 million people had to take sides on an issue that they'd just rather not talk about.
And that helps increase the social tension over
abortion.
That
increases the social tension. And we changed some minds. So the tally on Judgment Day, we're going to get some some in our favor because some people changed their minds.
And let's close with Dougonomics.
Dougonomics,
Reaganomics, Obamanomics, and Dougonomics. So, Doug, you're the latest...
Victim. I'm a victim, Bob. I was laid off.
Oh, I thought you were liberated from your job thanks to Republican socialist policies.
I was liberated. I was a victim. Anyway, I got on the internet and I went to file for unemployment and I got like halfway through it and I just I haven't completed it because it just felt I had to go take a shower. And then I got up this morning, I had an idea. I've been talking to some friends of mine.
Yeah.
So in about 4 hours this morning, I started a new business. I registered a new trade name.
That's exciting. You're starting a car company?
Yeah.
No, but Doug, you've always been very successful, and you've been in sales primarily.
Primarily in sales.
High-tech type devices, medical devices. Mm-hmm. Always successful, beautiful family, children, beautiful home. You know, you're a real estate investor. So always successful, and now you're looking for work.
I'm not looking for a job. Oh. I am looking for work. I'm looking for a way to make money, mm-hmm. and I think I've got a pretty good idea, and so I got it all. It's amazing. I got on the internet this morning for less than $400. I've got a trademark nationwide, a business mm-hmm. here in Colorado, and I've got the opportunity to start a business that nobody else has really thought of. So
and the internet has increased productivity so dramatically.
It's amazing.
And so everybody who are predicting the end of the world, they don't always take Craigslist into account. I mean, that's a significant. And eBay and Amazon, all these companies have so dramatically improved the productivity of the average American that it's hard to go into a depression. I mean, we're working at it.
We're doing the best we can.
Faith-based initiatives, entitlement programs for seniors, prescription drug, billions here and there, hundreds of billions. So we're working on it, but we're not there yet.
Well, we're not going to get there, at least not in my economy.
All right, good.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Doug McBurney, what a joy to have you back in studio. Hope you stay out of work for a while. We'll do more shows together. This is Bob Benyart in Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center. What a great school. And our website is kgov.com.